I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we have worked too hard to protect free speech to sit back and watch it be attacked by someone who's supposed to agree with us. Plus, President Donald Trump says he wants to declare Antifa a domestic terror group, so what is he waiting for? And only a week into the school year, Seattle's public school students have already found a reason to walk out of classes. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What a screaming deal. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. It has and continues to be a really scary time in America for free speech, certainly the last 5 years in particular. I think that that became even worse and compounded during the pandemic, and especially in places like Washington State. Just think of all of the things and the efforts to undermine our ability to speak our minds. I mean, we go back to the era of the pandemic, the vilification that occurred from the government. And that's really what free speech is about, right? You're supposed to not be suppressed by the government in your ideas and your thoughts and your words. And you'll remember the press conferences from Jay Inslee vilifying people who would push back against any sort of mandates that came down. And even, I would argue, businesses being sought out and targeted who spoke out publicly. We had several instances of businesses that were on the news pushing back against, you know, be it vaccine mandates or some of the mandates that required closures or the closure of indoor dining, as an example. And then all of a sudden turn around and, you know, Elle and I would be at their door and they'd be under investigation. And that's very much because they spoke out and pushed back against what Governor Inslee at the time was doing. And then you get into the 2020 election. I mean, remember, they were about to criminalize election wrong speak in the state of Washington. They had a bill, thank God it didn't pass, they had a bill that Democrats in Olympia supported that would have prosecuted people. It would have been a violation of the law to say that you thought the 2020 election was stolen. I mean, just crazy stuff. And then we still have some of these efforts going on to subvert speech. The hate crime hotline. Governor Bob Ferguson, when he was Attorney General, championed the Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force, which, of course, only looks at right-wing extremism, totally ignores all the rampant left-wing extremism. But that goes hand in hand with this new hate crime hotline that they continue to operate to this day. And all it is a snitch line, is a government snitch line where you can have people who feel wronged by your speech. Maybe you misgender them or whatever it is, or you whisper some sort of microaggression to a barista on Capitol Hill, and all of a sudden they're calling the government-run hate crime hotline, giving that hotline your name, and now you're on some government list as maybe being someone who is guilty of a hate crime. And so the left's attacks on free speech in the last 5 years have been horrifying. And it is the gateway to totalitarianism when you start to control speech. And of course, I gave some local examples because we mostly cover Seattle and Washington state politics. I haven't even brought up, you know, the subversion of speech across social media platforms that was done hand in hand with the government, be it on, you know, I think of the Hunter Biden laptop story. I don't have to revisit all of this for you guys, but you couldn't even privately DM someone the Hunter Biden laptop story without then Twitter taking it down. And of course, that was true with information that would be put out or articles that would be shared questioning the pandemic response, etc. So you guys know. And we've been fighting this fight, and conservatives in particular have been in the trenches and really painting Democrats as the primary aggressors when it comes to our First Amendment rights. And that's why, and I do not say this lightly, that's why Attorney General Pam Bondi today has to go. She has to either resign or President Trump has to fire her. I was shocked yesterday when I saw this interview she did on a podcast and was talking about, of course, after Charlie Kirk's assassination. And clearly there's been a lot of hateful speech out there about Charlie Kirk, about Donald Trump, that's been going on for years. But people can say that they are happy that Charlie Kirk is dead. This is America. They can say that. They can celebrate it. They can say all sorts of horrible, awful things. And the government cannot go after them for it. And it seems to be that that's what Pam Bondi was suggesting in this interview, that she and the Department of Justice want to do.
There's free speech and then there's hate speech. And there is no place, especially now, especially after what happened to Charlie, in our society.
Do you see more law enforcement going after these groups who are using hate speech and putting cuffs on people so we show them that some action is better than no action?
We will absolutely target you, go after you,
what?
If you are targeting anyone with hate speech, anything. And that's across the aisle.
What? First of all, hate speech is free speech. Hate speech is free speech. And you two are sitting there talking about putting handcuffs on people for speech that you find abhorrent and that I find abhorrent too. And so Pam Bondi immediately, and I kind of went to bed thinking, I hope I'm not on an island on this. Because remember, we always say you set your moral compass and you stay the course. And if free speech matters to you, then free speech matters to you. And no matter where it's under attack, you're going to defend it. Kind of went to bed and I'm like, God, I hope I wake up and other conservatives also think that Pam Bondi needs to be fired, because that is insane. And thankfully, I woke up and people who are morally consistent on the right were saying the same thing, and were saying maybe not that she needed to be fired, but were pointing out that hate speech is free speech. And we can't live in a country where the government punishes speech it disagrees with. So Pam Bondi was feeling this blowback and she took to X to try to explain herself. And it seems that she was, and this is kind of a tried and true thing that political figures do when they say something stupid, is they say it was edited out of context or taken out of context. She said, hate speech that crosses the line into threats of violence is not protected by the First Amendment. It's a crime. For far too long, we've watched the radical left normalize threats, call for assassinations, and cheer on political violence. That era is over. And then she says, under federal law, it is a federal crime to transmit any communication containing any threat to kidnap any person or any threat to injure the person. It says it makes it a felony to threaten public officials, members of Congress, or their families. She said, you cannot call for someone's murder. You cannot SWAT a member of Congress. You cannot dox a conservative family and think it will be brushed off as free speech. These acts are punishable crimes, and every single threat will be met with the full force of the law. Free speech protects ideas, debate, and even dissent, but it does not and will never protect violence. It is clear that violent rhetoric is designed to silence others from voicing conservative ideas. We will never be silenced, not our families, not our freedoms, and never for Charlie. His legacy will not be erased by fear or intimidation. So I read that, and then I went back and found the full clip of this interview she did to figure out, was this taken out of context? You always want to try to figure that out because the internet is full of things out of context. And here is, you know, she was asked a question about what's happening on college campuses, essentially, and some of the political vitriol. And here's her full response.
The anti-Semitism, what's been happening at college campuses around this country is disgusting. It's despicable. And we've been fighting that. We've been fighting these universities left and right, and we're not going to stop. There's free speech and then there's hate speech. And there is no place, especially now, especially after what happened to Charlie, in our society.
Do you see more law enforcement going after these groups who are using hate speech and putting cuffs on people so we show them that some action is better than no action?
We will absolutely target you, go after you, if you are targeting anyone with hate speech, anything. And that's across the aisle. I mean, look what happened. Think about Josh Shapiro. What happened to Governor Shapiro? I talked to Josh multiple times. Democrat, governor, Jewish. They firebombed his house while his wife and children were sleeping upstairs. It's a miracle.
Yeah, and that's a crime.
Nothing worse happened to, it's a miracle that nothing happened to Josh and he and his family are safe. They're traumatized, but that's what's happened in this world. And we are going to fight every step of the way to show that you will face the most severe consequences if you come after someone and you target someone for their political views or for any reason at all.
Yeah, she's mixing together two completely different things. She brings up anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is horrible, but it is protected speech. You can go out there and say any sort of horrible things about Jewish people that you want, as long as you're not making actionable threats of violence against their lives. And then she brings up hand in hand in this conversation about free speech versus hate speech, you know, the person who firebombed Governor Josh Shapiro, who was a left-wing nut that did it, by the way, an anti-Semite. Yeah, that's a crime that has nothing to do with speech or protected speech or whether you've taken free speech too far. So she's mixing all these things up, and I don't know which it is, but we cannot have a chief law enforcer in this country. We cannot have a chief law enforcer in the United States of America who either fundamentally doesn't understand the First Amendment and the protections that it provides to the citizenry, or who doesn't care about the First Amendment and the protections that it provides to the citizenry. So whether she misunderstands or she understands very well, but she wants to go after people who commit wrong speech, it doesn't matter. Whichever one it is, we cannot have a chief law enforcer who engages in that, just as I wouldn't want, and I don't want, a chief law enforcer in the state of Washington when Bob Ferguson was the attorney general and they were pushing ideas of criminalizing wrong speech over the elections. That is not someone who should have a job as the chief law enforcer. It's scary stuff. And again, it's a path toward totalitarianism, which is what we were trying to stop Democrats from doing in their attacks over free speech. And so you have to be morally consistent on these things. That I make a living off the First Amendment. So yes, I mean, I think we all have a stake in this. Do I think that Pam Bondi would actually be allowed to go out and prosecute people over wrong speech? I'd like to think not, and I like to think that the reaction that she's getting from her fellow conservatives is a wake-up call for her that maybe she needs to speak more carefully on First Amendment issues. But, like, look, I didn't call for Pam Bondi to be fired after the whole mishandling of the Jeffrey Epstein thing, but she needs to go after this. It's just unacceptable. We can't have anyone in a position like that who so freely dismisses what the First Amendment provides for us. And it isn't the first time this week she's done that. So that's the other thing. It's not the first time this week that she's done that. So this was something we didn't discuss on the show yesterday, but there was this crazy clip that came out where this group was going to have a vigil for Charlie Kirk after he was assassinated. And they put in an order with a local Office Depot that was basically just a poster that had Charlie Kirk's picture on it. It was like rest in peace or something like this. And this is what happened when they went to the store to pick it up.
We came in for an order earlier for to print a poster for a vigil tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for somebody that passed.
It's not
it's so propaganda. I'm sorry. We don't fit that here.
Alrighty. So who we have, what's your name?
Farrell. I'm print supervisor.
Thank I'm you. One of the managers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately.
So they say they don't print political propaganda. No. So this is somebody that passed away a couple years
That's
ago.
That's political propaganda, unfortunately. I'm
so
sorry.
This is for a prayer tonight, for a prayer vigil?
Mm-hmm. It's still propaganda, unfortunately.
What makes it propaganda?
Because he's a political figure and I don't have to...
I mean, that's nuts, right? That's crazy. But at the same time, it isn't something that the government should get involved in. And here's what Pam Bondi said about it on Fox News.
Businesses cannot discriminate. If you want to go in and print posters with Charlie's pictures on them for a vigil, you have to let them do that. We can prosecute
you
for
don't.
That. I have Harmeet Dhillon right now in our civil rights unit looking at that immediately, that Office Depot had done that. We're looking at that.
Yeah, and even she misunderstands the law. Political groups are not a protected class of people. Now, I guess you could try to spin this as because he's a Christian, but the dumbass sitting behind the counter at Office Depot who says it's propaganda is clearly talking about his politics and brings that up a couple times. So she doesn't even, she's the Attorney General of the United States, and she doesn't even understand that, unfortunately, as much as sometimes I think it should be, your political beliefs are not a protected class. And furthermore, what she's saying there and this idea that they would somehow look at a civil rights violation against Office Depot for this, it's so contrary to what conservatives preach. Let the free market deal with Office Depot. And it is, first of all, Office Depot is on its last leg anyway. Like, I'm shocked Office Depot is still even a thing. But they were eviscerated on social media over it. There are millions of conservatives who will never, ever go to Office Depot ever again. And the company had to come out. They apologized. The two workers in that clip were fired by Office Depot for saying that it was political propaganda. That's the appropriate. Let the free market dictate the response to Office Depot. We don't need big government and the Department of Justice and the Office of Civil Rights going after Office Depot because two dumb employees don't like Charlie Kirk and his politics and didn't want to print a poster for him. So that's it to me. It's the final straw. Pam Bondi has to go. And I think Americans right now need more than ever someone in that position and every position of authority in the government who are true champions for the First Amendment. And while I'm at it, you know, occasionally I have to call balls and strikes. And as much as I love Donald Trump, he doesn't help with these situations sometimes. He just goes off on these tangents. But he's asked about this by, I think it was Jonathan Carl with ABC News as he was leaving the White House this morning about these comments from Pam Bondi. And instead of taking the opportunity to say, you know, we're not going to criminalize speech, Charlie wouldn't have wanted that, he says this.
What do you think Pam Bondi's saying she's going to go after hate speech? A lot of your allies say hate speech is free speech.
She'll probably go after people like you because you treat me so unfairly. It's hate. You have a lot of hate in your heart. Maybe they'll come after ABC. Well, ABC paid me $16 million recently for a form of hate speech, right?
Donald.
Your company paid me $16 million for a form of hate speech. So maybe they'll have to go after you.
In case you think I edited that out of context and you cut him off, no, I listened to the rest of it. Then he goes on to talk about the work they're doing in D.C. and how they don't get credit for it from the media, which is true. That's ridiculous. Like, no, that wasn't hate speech. Like, the media, you know, it's just wild. So he could have done better. But something needs to happen with Pam Bondi in this regard, and the administration needs to make clear. And again, you know, she's making these comments and she's making it about Charlie Kirk. There's a tweet for everything. Charlie Kirk in 2024. Hate speech does not exist legally in America. There's ugly speech, there's gross speech, there's evil speech, and all of it is protected by the First Amendment. Keep America free. You know, as much as sometimes you'd like to shut up the other side, you always look at that power in the hands of your worst enemy, and we don't want the other side shutting us up. And we have experienced it in states like Washington for too long. And so we simply cannot allow any attacks on the First Amendment, even if it's coming from people who we predominantly agree with on most political things. Well, while I'm at it, since I criticize Donald Trump so rarely, why don't we just keep going with it today? So this one's hard for me because obviously it's very personal. I have been calling for years to make Antifa and designate Antifa a domestic terror organization. Besides, like, maybe the drug cartel and maybe back in the heyday, the mob, I don't know if there's been a more damaging organized crime syndicate than Antifa. And I've kind of had two thoughts. You know, if designating them a domestic terror group won't actually accomplish anything, then maybe you go after them for racketeering or RICO or something like that. So in light of, you know, the assassin of Charlie Kirk, he had Antifa on one of his, the very anti-fascist Antifa messaging on one of the bullets, and, you know, was very indoctrinated in this far left Antifa ideology. President Trump was in the Oval Office having a press conference, and a member of the media asked him again, brought up this issue again. Is it time to designate Antifa a domestic terror group?
Do you plan on designating Antifa finally a domestic terror organization?
Well, it's something I would do, yeah. If I have support from the people back here, I think we'd start with Pam, I think. But I would, if you give me, I would do that 100%. And others also, by the way. But Antifa is terrible.
Okay, do it. You've been talking about it for years. The clock is ticking on your presidency. Like, what are you waiting for? And you're deferring to Pam Bondi. And I'm not saying don't work with Pam Bondi on it. You're the president of the United States. You declared the cartel to be a terror organization and bombed them. If you want to declare Antifa a domestic terror organization, you can do it like that as the president. I don't know what he's waiting for or what the hesitancy is. Now, maybe it's because it's not so cut and dry. And there's, you know, the left will say Antifa doesn't exist. Antifa is a figment of our imagination. And it's so funny because if you go out to these riots and stuff, Antifa says Antifa exists. I mean, when I was down at the federal building in Seattle for some of the first anti-ICE actions that they were holding down there, Antifa was walking around saying, this is Antifa land. There's no cops here. They call themselves Antifa. They exist. Now, let's say there's a question of, well, how would we identify a member of Antifa. You know, it's not like they're the Hell's Angels or something and they're like patch wearing members. Although, yes, some of them do wear patches that say Antifa or have the logo affiliated with Antifa. So in some cases, it is that simple. But look at all the other groups in America or overseas that are, you know, members of ISIS. Some of them fly flags. Not all of them does, but you do. But you figure out who's working in concert with terrorists, right? The drug cartel. I mean, they don't have a little card in their wallet that says, oh, I'm with the Sinaloa drug cartel. And that's what you need in order to make the case. No, they're working with the drug cartel and they're working in concert to kill people and distribute drugs and narcotics. These people have back channels. They communicate on Reddit and on Discord. And they get together. Yes, they do. In shady back alleys on Capitol Hill. They do. There is a way to take them down. And so maybe it's less domestic terror group and more building some sort of racketeering case. And he did mention that in his response.
I've been speaking to the attorney general about bringing RICO against some of the people that you've been reading about that have been putting up millions and millions of dollars for agitation. These aren't protests. These are crimes, what they're doing. Criminal RICO, because they should be put in jail. What they're doing to this country is really subversive.
And I agree. So what are you waiting for? It's one of the most important things I think the president could do in the time that he has left. And yes, I take this personally. You know that I've been assaulted by Antifa on numerous occasions over many years. Not just a couple months ago outside the ICE facility, not just in 2020 during CHOP, but going back to the Occupy movement and the Occupy days. And so I do take it personally. I've had many friends assaulted by Antifa. I've been covering them for years. And all they're doing is getting more violent. It used to be when we started, you know, covering them during the Occupy movement, which was, gosh, what, 2011, 2012, 2013. You know, they'd go downtown, they'd break some windows of the Nike store and, oh, yeah, down to capitalism or whatever it is. And even though some of them were wearing Nike shoes, you know, it didn't really matter to them. And yeah, that was bad, like they were rioting. But at the time, it was they would break a couple windows and scurry off, scamper off from whence they came. And then things got worse and worse and worse in the Black Lives Matter movement and all the stuff. All of a sudden, they were assaulting police officers and they were assaulting members of the media. And then they were doing things that literal terrorists do. You go to 2020, they were lighting police cars on fire. They were stealing police rifles. They were taking over segments of the city and patrolling them with their own self-appointed security, armed with weapons of war that were handed to them out of the trunk of a car. They killed people in CHOP. And now they're assaulting federal agents. You know, they've blocked modes of transportation, critical infrastructure, and they killed Charlie Kirk. Antifa killed Charlie Kirk. So they're murdering people. So every year, every month, every day, every hour, every minute that goes by, Antifa gets more emboldened and more violent. So stop talking about it and just do it. It is time to crack down on the far left factions in this country that are responsible not only for so much of the violence that we're seeing, but so much of the division and discord that we're seeing. And that goes to every facet of life. These Antifa ideologies are filtering into our schools. We'll get to that more later on in the show. These kids are literally being trained. Remember Ian Golash, the infamous Seattle public school teacher who took his kids, went with his students to storm the King County jail in the name of racial justice. So stopping Antifa and saying, yes, there is a consequence for your actions and you're going to do hard time in federal prison. Man, it will improve so many facets of life in America. And yes, it will help heal our country because we've got these like 5 to 10% of actually dangerous people on the far left who, if we can contend with them, we can get back to some semblance of normalcy as a nation. So what are you waiting for? I don't understand. And it is very personal to me, but it's just, it should have been done years ago. We've been talking about it for years. Less talk, more action. Let's do something with Antifa. All right. Wow. Did my TDS come back momentarily? No, it didn't. Still love you, Donald Trump. Still think you're doing a great job. You're just not perfect. And who is, really? All right. Coming up next, this is wild. The lengths that Governor Bob Ferguson will go to just blame things on Donald Trump, is insane. And in this case, he's ignoring 30 years of political failure and putting it all on the back of Donald Trump. We'll discuss. First, I highly encourage you guys to take some time, especially, you know what, as the weather gets a little cooler, maybe the rain picks up. Maybe you're stuck inside more often. That's a great time to schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. We all need insurance. Chances are you're probably paying too much for insurance and you're angry about it. Well, did you figure out your insurance on your own? Because that's probably the issue. There are professionals out there who will do it for you and will have your best interest in mind. First Mark Insurance, there's a reason why I'm a member of the First Mark family and so many Undivided viewers and listeners are. And I always get the same type of email. Brandy, I wish I'd done this sooner. Over and over. Brandy, I wish I'd done this sooner. Yeah, it's because it really is a no-brainer. They're going to take care of everything for you. You don't pay First Mark anything. So you don't pay First Mark anything for doing all of this for you. They go out, they shop the market, they come back with their recommendations. And like so many Undivided viewers and listeners, you could be saving thousands of dollars a year just by making that one simple call. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge today. Okay, so Bob Ferguson, of course, is obsessed with Donald Trump. Absolutely obsessed. I don't know if there's a human being on the planet who's more obsessed with Donald Trump, but he uses Donald Trump. So there's a difference here with Bob Ferguson. I don't believe that Bob Ferguson goes home at night and rocks himself to sleep thinking about Donald Trump and is ruining his life and totally TDS, utterly obsessed, like he can't find happiness. That's my Bob Ferguson rocking himself to sleep. I don't think that's him. Bob's more strategic than that. And he uses other people's TDS against them. And he uses other people's TDS to further his political career. As I've said many times, doing that got him to the governor's office. So why would he stop doing it? He's going to continue to do it. He did it last week. We called him out for having a press conference talking about how bad the tariffs are for Washington businesses and families and how it's going to cost them $2 billion this year. Well, he just passed $9.5 billion in new taxes, the bulk of those which are going to hit Washington businesses in a matter of weeks. So he uses it to distract from his own personal failures on a variety of things, crime, homelessness, you name it. But this is digging deep, quite literally, actually. This is digging deep. And it's gone quite a ways back in time. So this takes a lot of explaining. I'm going to do the best that I can. It has to do with the Hanford nuclear site in Washington state. So Bob Ferguson had a press conference. Here's what he put out. He said, I went to the Tri-Cities on Friday to send a clear message to the Trump administration. Do your job at Hanford. If the federal government does not live up to its obligations, we will take legal action. Zero chance we're backing down on this. And zero chance we lose. Okay, so that sounds, you know, ominous. Like, whoa, 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 is the federal government not going to clean up Hanford? What's going on over there? What does he have to say? And then United States Senator Patty Murray of our state put out a very similar damning statement. She said, I have absolutely no intention of allowing the Trump administration to upend nuclear waste cleanup at Hanford. We're so close to turning nuclear waste into glass at Hanford, with the waste treatment plant literally slated for hot commissioning next month. I will not stand by and let the Trump administration kneecap the Hanford cleanup mission and violate the legally binding holistic agreement because they are ignorant and corrupt. So it's like, oh my God, wait, is the Trump administration a month away from finally, after all these years, cleaning up Hanford? What, are they going to not do it? What's going on here? So we have to get some history. We'll go to the Washington State Standard for this. I thought they had a good article explaining the history of all of this, if you're not familiar. As feds talk of changing course on Hanford nuclear cleanup, Washington officials get heated. So here's some history. The U.S. government set up Hanford in 1943 to create plutonium for the nation's atomic bombs, including those exploded in New Mexico and over Nagasaki in 1945. That development work created many billions of gallons of chemical and radioactive wastes, the worst 56 million gallons of which were pumped into 177 underground tanks. About a third of those tanks leak. At least a million gallons of radioactive liquid have leaked into the ground, seeping into the aquifer 200 feet below and then into the Columbia River, roughly 7 miles away. So that's bad. Everyone agrees, like, okay, we can't let that happen. No one's disagreeing that this is what happened and this is a bad thing and we've got to clean it up. The tanks are considered the worst radiological contamination problem in the Western Hemisphere. Bad stuff. So Hanford's current legal target calls for glassifying all these wastes by 2052. So that was their solution. We're going to turn this all into glass. That's what we're going to do, right? The Department of Energy has internally moved those targets back to 2069. So they're supposed to start doing this. It's been going on for a long time. Their current target is full glassification of all the wastes by 2069. So the state standard goes on to say Hanford has been looking at glassifying its tank wastes since the 1990s. So this is very important. Donald Trump wasn't even necessarily thinking about becoming president, although around that time, I think he did that Oprah interview where she asked, "Do you want to be president?" And he said no. But Hanford has been looking at glassifying its tank waste since the 1990s. It began construction on the facility to be able to do that in 2002, with the first glassification plant legally scheduled to go online in 2009. However, it's currently 16 years behind. This first plant is supposed to take care of 40 to 50% of the tank's low activity waste. Before I keep reading, let me just make sure everybody understands. So they started talking in the 1990s. Let's just glassify this waste. They began construction on a glassification plant in 2002. It was supposed to be online by 2009, but it's been delayed, and it's currently 16 years behind schedule. The master plan has been to build two low-activity glassification plants, plus a third to handle the site's 5 million to 6 million gallons of high-level radioactive tank waste. The entire project's original budget in 2002, again, long before Donald Trump was president, was $4 billion. This has grown to roughly $30 billion. So just so we're all caught up here, they start talking about glassifying the nuclear waste in the 1990s. In 2002, long before Orange Man Bad, they come up with a plan and they start building the glassification facility. And they have an original budget for it of $4 billion for the entire project, the entire thing, glassifying all the waste. Well, from 2002 on, things have been a disaster. Mismanaged, delays, overruns since 2002 and onward through presidents of both political parties, George Bush, Obama, Biden, yes, Trump. I was trying to think because it's Trump, Biden, Trump. Yes, Trump too. It has been delayed. It is way over budget. It's a disaster. And now all of a sudden, we're supposed to be getting close to starting this glassification. And Bob Ferguson's in the Tri-Cities and Senator Patty Murray is out there saying that the Trump administration is going to put a stop to it all. Except that's not what the Trump administration is doing at all. So Trump fired the official who is overseeing Hanford cleanup. His name is Roger Jarrell. So that left Chris Wright, the head of the Department of Energy, the secretary of the Department of Energy, in charge of everything. And you know what? Chris Wright was like, hey, this has been going really poorly for a long time. So we just want to do a review of the project and the plan and where the budget's at. And that's it. So this is the statement put out after all this hand-wringing from the U.S. Department of Energy's Chris Wright on their continued commitment to environmental cleanup efforts. The U.S. Department of Energy today released the following statement from Secretary Chris Wright in response to recent inaccurate news reports. Contrary to news reports, the Department of Energy has made no changes to its longstanding commitment to the environmental cleanup of the Hanford site. DOE is continuing to examine testing and operations at the site to ensure waste disposal options are safe, cost-effective, and environmentally sound. Across the entire department, we are actively working to improve the safety and efficacy of the important work we do each and every day. So you have this situation that's been an utter boondoggle. Unfortunately, it's a situation that you can't just say, we give up. Can't do that. We've got nuclear waste seeping into the ground, seeping into the Columbia River. It's not an option. It's not like the train to nowhere in California where it's like, well, we could finish it or not finish it. This has to be finished, right? But the reality is, over a long period of time, it hasn't been going on time or on budget. It's been a disaster under many presidents, many energy secretaries, etc. And so Trump fires the guy who'd been in charge of it. Now that responsibility falls on Chris Wright. And Chris Wright, rightfully, wants to examine it very closely. Don't you think if you're $26 billion over budget, 16 years behind schedule, wouldn't anyone want someone, anyone in the government to come in and look at what's going wrong? And that's all Chris Wright is doing. That's literally all he's doing, is to say, hey, this has been such a boondoggle. We want to do a full review, make sure everything's been being done right. Everything's being done safely and effectively. And because of that, Bob Ferguson, who has to find a way to distract and blame Donald Trump for everything, rushes over to the Tri-Cities to have a press conference and say Donald Trump is going to stop the cleanup at the Hanford nuclear site. And Senator Patty Murray, a good soldier, follows him over there and puts out these hand-wringing statements about it. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I don't know if they just had to find a way to distract from all the bad news about Democrats this week and how things are going for them and just, you know, find something, one more thing to blame on Donald Trump. But it's nuts. We should all be pissed off about how the Hanford nuclear site cleanup has been going. We should all be angry about how much it's costing. We should all be angry that it's taking so long. And so the Secretary of the Department of Energy wants to figure out why. He wants to take a closer look at it. We should all say, yes, please do that. We still got to clean it up. So do it quickly. But yes, please put it under a microscope because we deserve some answers. It's wild. TDS to the extreme. All right, this story is super sad. So I'm just going to warn you guys about this ahead of time, but we have to talk about it. It was kind of like, you know, the story we did yesterday with that guy who died on the streets of Portland and from a fentanyl overdose and was sitting there for hours, just frozen like a statue with tinfoil in his hand. And it's this tragic thing that you don't want to talk about, you don't want to look at, but it just speaks to the failure of progressives to protect the most vulnerable. And I don't know who's more vulnerable than a five-year-old child living in a homeless encampment. And that's what this story is about. So I'm not going to get into the details of it. It really is just awful. This is from King 5. Man living in Seattle homeless camp arrested for allegedly raping a five-year-old girl. That girl and her mother are also living in the Mount Baker neighborhood camp. So this is, it's referred to as Tent City 3. So this is a tent city that is funded with your money. It's one of these ideas that, hey, instead of having these tent encampments like in a bush somewhere or under a bridge, we'll create this barrier, we'll have security going in and out, we'll have some semblance of rules and order, and we'll allow people to set up their tents there, and we'll fund it with millions of dollars in people's tax money because these Seattleites will absolutely hand over more of their tax money if they are convinced to believe that it's going to something just. So I think that makes this even worse, is that this happened at a tent city, not just some random tent encampment out in the woods. So according to King 5 News, a 46-year-old man is in the King County Jail on suspicion of raping a five-year-old girl at the homeless camp in Seattle's Mount Baker neighborhood. He's being held on $750,000 bail for first-degree child rape, first-degree kidnapping, and imprisonment. On September 12th, so just a couple days ago, Seattle police officers responded to a report of a suspicious circumstance at Tent City 3. The caller reported that a resident was trying to get a girl inside his tent. And at the time they made the call, this caller, which thank God they called police, couldn't find the man and couldn't find the girl. So they were very worried, understandably so. When police arrived, they spoke with the girl and her mother. Their family were residents of the camp for about 2 weeks. The girl told police she was sexually assaulted September 11th and September 12th. Her mother told police she'd been complaining of pain. On the evening of September 11th, the girl and her family were hanging out in a communal area of the camp. At some point, her mother told police she couldn't find her daughter. A few minutes into the search, the girl returned, according to police. And, you know, the police report, again, I'm not going to get into the details, but basically they... She demonstrated all this on a doll. What happened had been complaining to her mom about pain. And so they have ample reason to believe that this 46-year-old man on more than one occasion raped a little 5-year-old girl. So this tent city is operated officially by Share Wheel, and they are part of the King County Regional Homeless Authority's response. They manage the contract with Share Wheel, which receives city funding. And of course, the King County Regional Homelessness Industrial Complex gets tens of millions of dollars every single year and has spent hundreds of millions of dollars responding to our homeless crisis only to make it worse. And they've also been criticized in the past, and it was one of the reasons why the former director had to resign, of mismanaging contracts and really of not having any oversight of some of these contracts. So here we have millions of dollars in your money going to something that was sold as an improvement to just living on the streets, this tent city. And there is so little oversight that a little 5-year-old girl can be raped there, allegedly. And this is pervasive throughout the entire system. It's one of the things when we talked about this guy in Portland yesterday that just blew my mind. Portland spending almost $1 billion a year for the greater Portland area to deal with homelessness and substance abuse. Yet you can have a man who in broad daylight in the middle of downtown overdoses, is deceased for hours like a statue clinging to tinfoil, and there's no outreach workers there to help? There's no outreach workers there to call police? Where is the money going? How is it possible? There's supposed to be security at these camps. And the camp isn't even very big, frankly, to think that something so horrific could happen at a camp like that. And again, no oversight. So this is, again, a pervasive problem, regardless of what kind of facility it is in the homeless industrial complex. So this is a tent city. We've had similar horrific instances at tiny house villages, where we've had crime and other things happening at tiny house villages, which is sort of the step up from a tent city. And then, remember, because Governor Bob Ferguson and Jay Inslee say that the biggest contributor to our homelessness crisis is just a lack of affordable housing, so they've put billions of dollars of your money into either buying existing hotels and converting them into sort of shelter or short-term living spaces, or building these gigantic apartment buildings in the core of cities without asking the surrounding neighborhoods and putting them up and saying this will solve our problems because they have this housing first approach. But of course, what happens? Well, they become drug dens. They're a magnet for crime. And all the stuff that was happening on the streets is just happening in these apartment buildings that you and I are paying for, and they become blights on the cities that they're in. So this is actually really timely because I was on my way to, I went to church on Sunday, to a service on Sunday, you know, kind of to honor Charlie Kirk and stuff. And I'm on the way there. And if you're on I-90 going westbound, coming into Bellevue, you'll see this big Plymouth housing complex on the right-hand side. And it's a low barrier housing that your money paid for and that continues to operate off of taxpayer funds. And I saw like 6 cop cars there. So I'm on my way to church. So who do I call? Jonathan Cho. I was like, Jonathan, I got a hot tip for you. I said, I know you're covering a lot of these things with the crime and disorder and lawlessness that's happening inside of some of these facilities. I said, well, Plymouth housing right now, there's 6 cops outside. What does Jonathan Cho say? I'm already here, Brandy. I'm already here. Of course he did. I'm already here. I'm looking into it. I got the tip too. I was like, great. So Jonathan Cho is there, and he's been doing this series on specifically Plymouth housing, which is another government contract that gets millions and millions of our dollars to operate these facilities with like literally no oversight. So he releases this video. This is great. I think I'm going to play the whole thing. So there's all these issues in these Plymouth housing complexes. People are dying in there from overdoses. People are being assaulted. People are being killed. It's been a pervasive issue. And he hasn't been able to get a lot of answers from the people who operate Plymouth Housing. So Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez, who is, of course, with We Heart Seattle, which is a nonprofit that tries to deal with these issues outside of the system, they want answers, right? So Plymouth Housing and the optics of this are horrible, horrible. Plymouth Housing is having an annual gala. Not just any annual gala. They're having an annual gala at one of the most expensive places in Seattle to have such a gala, at the Westin in downtown Seattle, the place where presidents stay when they visit. And it's a fancy big dinner. People dress nicely. And think about, again, what they do. They're supposed to, like, help the poorest of the poor homeless people. It's a very much, what is the, what's the movie? Mockingjay and the... What is the movie? Hunger Games. It's very Hunger Games-esque when you watch this video. So Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez crash the party. And they want to ask, basically, if the people who are in that gala even know the horrible stuff that's happening behind closed doors in these Plymouth housing facilities. Enjoy.
I'm here at the Plymouth Housing Gala, walking by. I obviously live and work downtown here in Belltown, and I want to ask people how the event went and if any discussion was around funding enablement kits, or what I call suicide kits, which is foil, pipes, and other paraphernalia to use drugs inside Plymouth Housing. Why are we allowing that inside? Should we be funding? Should you be donating to an organization that's handing out foil?
What'd you guys think of the fundraiser?
Amazing.
It is?
Yep. It's very good. I just can't believe how big it was.
What are your thoughts on all the drug overdose deaths inside Plymouth Housing facilities? A lot of the residents are dying of drug overdoses. Did they talk about that?
No, we're not. There's treatment programs, but they didn't mention any statistics.
Yeah, well, we've done numerous exposés showing all the deaths inside Plymouth Housing. Is that concerning to you?
Well, it's preventative, but I know that there's a model of harm reduction.
Yeah, well, treatment isn't required. Drug addiction treatment's not required. Do you think it should be required inside Plymouth? It's a story that Plymouth doesn't want to tell because they probably wouldn't be getting taxpayer dollars.
Maybe you walked into a brand new facility or one that wasn't overtaken by drugs, but the reality is there's several projects that have been taken over by drugs and dealers, and we're housing them for free and in perpetuity to eventually kill my neighbor, my friend, Mike Matzik. And so I'm here for Mike to talk about Mike's story, who I provided regular weekly case management for, and then he died after I got banned from Plymouth Housing.
Why is We Heart Seattle's Andrea Suarez banned from Plymouth Housing?
I'm not going to speak to that.
Whoa. I came in to see Mike with a camera to show how horrible his room conditions were and went public with that.
Have you seen our expose on the Lewiston Scargo, Miss Lee? Do you keep track of all the deaths from drug overdoses in Plymouth House? Don't touch me again.
Please don't.
You're on camera assaulting me, sir. Are your title sponsors like Microsoft aware of the horrific conditions inside Plymouth housing facilities? We've obtained the 911 calls from the Bellevue, the latest Plymouth housing facilities, Miss Lee. Can you just tell me why there's so many problems at the Bellevue Plymouth housing facilities, Miss Lee? Miss Lee, I thought Plymouth was about transparency. Why do you think so many people are in denial?
Nobody's investigating this. Nobody's talking about that there's another side to the story, and I just want improvement. I want to see our taxpayer dollars go to programs that address the drug enablement aspect of low barrier housing first models.
Wow. First of all, Jonathan Cho is fearless. He has no shame. Like, I have too much shame to go up to someone and, you know, on an escalator, but he is fearless. And just think of the optics there. They're in this fancy reception for a gala at the Westin. And he's asking people as they come out, did they talk about all the deaths that are happening in the Plymouth housing facilities? They talk about how people are just overdosing and dying. And the guy says, no, they didn't offer statistics. So they're in there behind closed doors at the Westin, having a gala, patting themselves on the back for all the homeless people that they're helping with your money. And not being honest with the people gathered there about what a failure it is. It's stunning. It is stunning. And they were exposed, laid bare by Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez. I think that's one of the best things Jonathan Cho has ever put out. It speaks to all of this so well. They don't have empathy. They don't care. It's all about money. It is all about money. And they can't keep the money coming in if homelessness is addressed and if substance abuse are addressed. Wow. And to those sponsors, so there's Jonathan had it. I think we have a still of it, don't we? Can we put that up? Because we have to call out these businesses. What the F are you doing funding that? Because you can't say you don't know. It's been pretty highly publicized thanks to people like Jonathan Cho. Amazon? Starbucks? Microsoft? I mean, Brad Smith with Microsoft was a speaker at the Washington Policy Center event last week. He knows how screwed up things are. Amazon? I mean, the homelessness and drug crisis is ruining Seattle's downtown. So why are you giving a dollar of your money to support something that's making it worse? That's not fixing anything. That's squandering money. They're already squandering public funds. Why do you want them to squander your funds too? And Starbucks? How many locations in Seattle have you had to close down because of the drug crime and homeless crisis? And you what? Because you want to look like you're doing something nice? Oh, we want to look as we're helping out these people who are helping out the homeless. Oh my God, you're helping people who are killing the homeless. Oh my God, you're helping people who are killing the homeless. I can't, it's stunning, you guys. It's stunning. I'm stunned because they know better. Amazon knows better. Starbucks knows better. Microsoft knows better. It's wild. And the homeless industrial complex keeps churning. All right, coming up next, a week into school, maybe a week and a half, we'll give them credit. Seattle Public School students already found a reason to walk out of classes because they want to show that they stand for something. Even though if it's something stupid. All right, a reminder that we are going to have a panel talking about housing policy and with Jonathan Cho. Gosh, I know that some of this will come up at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue on October 22nd and 23rd, the Engage Conference. Please come and attend. Our panel was quite popular last year, you know, because we are nothing if not entertaining. But also there's a lot to talk about when it comes to housing policy in the state of Washington, from everything that we just discussed to rent control. And the way the media covers it is really what our panel is going to be focused on, is sort of trying to navigate a lot of the misinformation that's out there about what's happening with housing policy in the state of Washington. It's being hosted by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org to register if you'd like to do that and join us at Engage. And if you are a small to mid-sized landlord, consider becoming a member of RHA. They can help you navigate this complex world of housing policy in the state, make sure that you're following all the new rules and regulations. And they're also down in Olympia every year trying to fight back against new bad policy. So rhawa.org. All right. You know, kids, we got to teach our kids to stand for something. You know, if you don't stand for anything, then really, what are you doing with your life? So Seattle Public School students decided they were going to take a stand against changes to school lunch. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. I once had a list compiled of all the things. We'll have to find it. We compiled a list, and by we, I mean Nicole. I know that one time Nicole compiled a list of all the things that Seattle Public School students had walked out of class for last year. And the list was like a mile long. They will stage a protest for anything and everything. Palestine, you know, BLM. They had a couple dumb ones that were really bad. I mean, this is probably takes the cake. But it was like this long, long list of things. They'll walk out for anything. And that's not by accident. They're being trained to be activists. I've mentioned Ian Golosh, the activist teacher, who actually took his students to storm the King County Jail in 2020 for a protest over like racial justice. And so they're being actively trained to be ideologues by other activists. How many members of Antifa and people who've been arrested at some of these demonstrations turn out to be Seattle public school teachers? So it's really no surprise. The staff loves it. They're training the next Antifa members of America. So this from the Seattle Times. At lunch policy walkout, Seattle students tell district, listen to our voices. So keep in mind here, school started September 3rd for the Seattle Public School District. September 3rd took them 10 days to find a reason to walk out of class. And they did this en masse. There were thousands of students who walked out over this. So it says hundreds, but it was thousands. I've seen the pictures. Seattle Times says hundreds of Seattle high school students rallied outside Seattle Public Schools headquarters on Monday to demand that the district drop plans to move to a two-lunch schedule at all of its comprehensive high schools. On Monday, when some of the high schools were expected to implement the new schedule, hundreds of students left school around 11 a.m. Many took public transit or personal vehicles to rally outside the district's headquarters in SoDo. What do we want? Students chanted during the boisterous protest in the late morning and early afternoon as their numbers spilled into the parking lot and side street. One lunch. When do we want it? Now. Join with me, Nicole. What do we want?
One lunch.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
One lunch.
When do we want it?
Now.
It says they need to listen to our voices, said Bailey Jones, an 11th grader at Ballard High School. She held up a sign that read, "You're destroying." Oh, no, it didn't. She held up a sign that read, "You're destroying our communities. No double lunch." So the school, you know, these schools are getting big. You know, they're going to split the lunch into two. This student, Bailey, 11th grader, said, "You're destroying, this is destroying our communities." What do you do with this? Let's see. Let's keep reading. This is a lot of fun. Evie Gozekas, a senior at Ingram High School and the Associated Student Body president, said the proposal will affect academics and students' ability to retake tests and work with teachers, which often happens during the single lunch period. A two-lunch schedule will also be distracting because some students will be on break while other students are in the classroom working and teachers are teaching. In its communications, the district has suggested that clubs could meet before and after school. But this student said that's a non-starter for some students, many of whom are involved in sports, and others have commitments during those times. Students have jobs, students need to provide for their families, and it's just completely inequitable for students. It's not a solution. So they walked out and held up signs that said, "You're destroying." You are destroying our community. I mean, we are raising the next generation of entitled
whiny
leftist
babies.
Whiny baby activists. And look, maybe there is, I'm not saying there's no legitimate complaints they might have if they actually were using this lunch period to do things and like they
life's
have a job. You know, life's not fair. Wake up earlier in the morning.
Yeah, that's
if you have things to do.
I saw another interview on some TV station that said 8:15 is just not feasible.
It's just not feasible.
For our club.
Oh, my gosh. We got to sleep. We need our beauty sleep, you know?
You know.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just ridiculous because, I mean, it's a statewide thing. Go protest in Reichdahl's office.
Yeah, it's
I
a Reichdahl thing, right? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, go protest Reichdahl for something like, I don't know, not giving you an education. Can we get right into our daily subscriber show poll since it's related to this?
Yes, we may.
Okay.
You might have to give me a second to get the poll in.
I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about this because we've seen so many of these student walkouts. It's like, what is the line? Because they were walking out, they walked out a lot over the climate, right? And one of the things I said, and people were saying it was wrong. There were some angry parents. This was a couple years ago. When students walked out in protest of climate change, that their kids got in trouble for it. And I was like, look, you know, free speech is not without freedom of is not without consequence. And so that's actually a great lesson to teach your kids is, hey, Susie, if you want to walk out of class for this, you can do that. But remember, using your voice and speaking out for things you believe in sometimes has consequences. That's a great lesson to teach a child. But instead, in so many of these instances, especially in the Seattle Public School District, it's like, nah, no big deal. No big deal. You know, go out because they want them to. They want them to go out and become little activists. So I asked you guys Regardless of what the protest is about, should public school students be allowed to walk out of classes in protest without receiving some sort of disciplinary action from the school? Because you could say, and you have to apply this to everything, like, what if they walked out for Charlie Kirk? You know, what if, versus, you know, walking out for climate change. And so it has to be no matter what it is, right? Because you can't pick and choose.
Right.
So do you think, Nicole, that kids should be able, like, for instance, there was a, I don't know if they called it a walkout or if they did it during a free period. Mm-hmm. Like if kids were to walk out in support of protecting girls' sports. So we'd have to want this to apply to that too. Should they be able to do that without receiving some sort of disciplinary action from the school, be it a tardy or a detention or whatever
absence.
It is, unexcused
yeah.
absence?
So no, I don't think you should be allowed to. These kids might have done it during their lunch period. So I think this may have been that 11 o'clock hour where that is their lunch period. And I think they might have arranged it during their lunch period.
But they stayed there into early afternoon.
So if they stayed,
yes.
Those are unexcused absences. Absolutely. So no, they have to deal with the consequences of choosing to protest like this.
Right, it's a good lesson. And then maybe you'll actually be more choosy about what you take a stand for.
Yes. Also,
and it's not everything under the sun. I'm trying to remember. There was something really, really dumb.
I
can't remember what it was.
10.
Right. If everything's worth protesting, nothing's worth protesting right. over. Christine, it should count as an unexcused absence. Sick of Wah says, no, test scores are in the toilet. They need to be in class. Although, you know what? I don't think they're learning anything in class either.
Well, I like how the you excuse know? Was, well, we need time to retake tests. Why don't you
pass it the first time? He says, if you're truly passionate about something, they can protest outside of school hours. Teachers that are encouraging students to walk out should have consequences, too. I agree with that. Amen. They should be teaching the fundamentals and not pushing their agenda on the kids. Junie has a different opinion. I say no with the caveat that if they do not want to participate in lessons on gender or sexuality, or if their religious liberties are being violated, they should have the rights to walk out. I disagree. Because again, you're standing up for something you believe in, and you are going to have to learn at an early age that that will have consequences, even if it's deeply unfair. Even if it's deeply unfair. Right now, 90% of you are saying, absolutely, if you walk out, there has to be some sort of consequence.
That's life.
Ken said, Brandy, when it comes to Seattle schools walking out, it's the equivalent of give a mouse a cookie, my favorite literary reference. Mm-hmm. And it is true. Give a mouse a cookie, and the mouse, you know, eats it. No side effects. Just going to demand more and more. I don't know what kind mm-hmm. of side effects.
If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk. If
right.
you give him a glass of milk, he's going to want...
Gonna want something.
I forget. Oh,
he's a needy little mouse. I have the book right there. I grab it and read it if you want.
Gonna want some chocolate.
All right. Lewis Peebles, without consequences, all it is a free day off from school. If I got caught ditching school my senior year, I would have to pay for it. If they miss a test, I'm sure there are those who showed up that would be happy how the bell curve worked out for them. Yeah. So a lot of you saying like, absolutely not. Let me just read quick from locals. And on X, I don't know what's happening with our X poll. I'm working on it with X. Elon, hit me up. For some reason with our subscribers, the X isn't giving a poll. They put the poll in and then the poll disappears.
Oh.
It just disappears. I'm working on it. I know. It's very frustrating. Matthew, if you want to protest, do it outside school hours. Right. They just want to miss class. Obviously. They just want to miss class. Todd
they
Welch.
They just want their way. They think everything should be exactly what they want it to be. Listen to our voices. If we say it, it shall be.
Right.
It shall be.
We're the bosses.
We're the boss.
But I also think there's a lot of hanger-ons. We're like, oh, okay, I'll miss class.
But they're told they're the bosses.
Yes.
They are 100%. Told that.
Okay. I agree. Todd Welch.
Did I tell this story on the Sunday show? I don't think I did, but I just feel like I should tell it because I don't think I'm going to be able to research it enough to really do it. But the backpack story. So my cousin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's such a good story. Yes. But this is what you need to be aware of when you send your kids to school, because my cousin homeschooled their kids for 2 years.
Yeah.
And one of them had to go back to school this year. And so she sent him back to school on the first day of sixth grade. He's on spectrum and he had to go to special ed. And the first day of sixth grade, his teacher got up and told him, when you get home, you clean out your backpack. Your parents have no right to go through your backpack. That's
How
what they told
crazy
him.
Is that? And before you tell what he mm-hmm. said, because it's wild. How many stories have we broken because a parent went through a kid's backpack mm-hmm. and found something and was like, what the hell is this? So that's, I almost think that's a response
mm-hmm.
for the teacher to tell the kids on the first day of school, your parents have no right to go into your backpack. So what did this amazing kid say?
So he went to his special ed teacher, like, so that was his connections teacher or something like that. And he said, I'm not going to follow that rule because my parents own my backpack and they can go through it anytime they want.
I love that so
which
much.
I love. Yes. And he came back and told his mom, just so you know, like, there's a rule I can't play by. You can go through my backpack anytime you want. And he does. He gives his mom everything. And I can't, every day he comes home with some gender crap. And she's very, like, this close to pulling him back out. So
how,
it's pretty wild.
Yeah, that is crazy. That's a crazy story. Todd Brisky says, the disciplinary action is what makes a walkout meaningful. Otherwise, it's just a fun thing to do. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. That's what gives it meaning, right? There's some risk involved associated with it. So, all right, good answers per the usual. Per the usual. That's a crazy story. That's a crazy story.
They want to divide. They want your kids to think that they are their own person. They have no connection to you and your parenting. And you know, I have so many friends right now that are really struggling with their high school students and their, you know, new college students and this detachment that they have. And I really think they're being taught it in schools. You
100%.
Don't need your parents. You are your own person. You don't have to respect your parents anymore. You don't have to answer to them. And I think it's coming from school.
Well, it's of course it is. I mean, but you're your own person, but we're going to shape you into the person we want you to be. But, it's creating all these little sexless, genderless robots who will go out there and do the bidding of the Democratic Party. That's 100% of what it is. Wild. It's very, very scary stuff.
Beware and send us this crap.
Send us stuff. Send us what's in your kid's backpack. Yeah. Okay. Let us
go
know
through
what's
it
in
every day.
All right. Good stuff. All right. We'll see in comments. Nicole, we debuted a new advertiser on the show yesterday. But for those of you who are fans of the Dori Monson Show, it's not a new advertiser to you. Valentine Roofing is the latest partner with Undivided. We're very excited to have them. And this is a great time of the year, actually, to debut this sponsorship because this is the time of year where you find out whether your roof is going to make it another season. Or whether you need to do something about it. So if you know that your roof is on its last legs, don't wait until the heavy rain starts. Valentine will give you a free roof assessment. And this is the best part. If your roof can be repaired, they're just going to repair it. They're not going to try to push you into getting a new roof if you don't need one yet. But if you do need one, and if it's leaking now, Valentine offers a free leak stop. So they'll make sure all the leaks are fixed. So you can calm down, take a deep breath, and then no further damage happens. And then they'll replace your roof after that. So this is why you see hundreds of five-star reviews for our friends at Valentine. And this is great. They also offer zero financing for most projects. So you can get zero down. So you can get the work done now and pay over time because roof is obviously a pretty big expense when you need one. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. And please, please make sure to tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. Valentine Roofing, welcome to Undivided. We're so happy to have you. All right, let's get a quick national story in. We kind of started the show with national, but we've been putting this off. We were going to do it on the show last week, and then we kept pushing it. This is crazy. So before I get to the story, there's the nuts and bolts is there's a college course on theft, like how to steal things. Okay. Before I get into that, though, it reminded me of something that happened a few days ago. So you've probably seen, if you live in political internet in Washington State, you've probably seen this. There's no shortage of people who hate me. I'm pretty used to that. It's kind of a normal part of my life when I log into the internet. But there was this guy, and he's kind of got a bigger social media following, like on YouTube. I think Squid Tips or something. And he showed up at the University of Washington and confronted Cam Higby in a unhinged rage. Because Cam was there in honor of Charlie Kirk, you know, with a sign that basically said, come debate me. And this guy, like, despises anyone he deems conservative, independent media or whatever it is. So he put out this YouTube video with this hierarchy of, it really read like a hit list of people he despises in right-wing media. And Jonathan Cho was on there, and I was on there, and Cam Higby and Katie Davis Court and some other people. But I didn't really cover it on the show because it's like, that's just another cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs leftist. But Jonathan Cho was just putting him on blast on his ex account. And apparently he like had an OnlyFans account, which I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but like naked pics with money all over his body. Why do all of the Trantifa types have OnlyFans accounts and like insist on posting nude pictures of themselves? But anyway, he also had this really weird video. So he works at Nordstrom's. His real name is Alex Randall. And he's a Nordstrom's employee, although I'm not sure if Nordstrom employs him still after all of this and his unhinged outbursts. But he, like, how much of this video did you keep in there?
A minute.
It's a minute. Okay. So he, like, went to a grocery store one night and was mad that he had to stand in line because there were no cashiers. It was just, like, self-checkout. So he just steals stuff. He's like, whatever, they don't need it. They're big, bad, evil corporations or whatever it is. So here's the clip.
I don't know if you noticed this, but they don't staff people after, like, 5 p.m. anymore at most grocery stores. I've noticed it at my QFC. I've noticed it at Safeway, at Fred Meyer. And they just force people into automation. And I've talked to workers, and they're just not giving people hours, and they're not hiring people. It is a choice by these companies to pay less people and waste more of our time as consumers because they think they can get away with
total
it. They're doing it to vacuum up that profit, and they're doing it to reduce worker power. Since I was getting it for other people, I'll do the second best thing, which is that although I did buy this Mountain Dew and I did get myself a receipt, I only paid for one of them and I just took the other two because the other workers are so f-ing busy, they can't pay attention. They can't monitor and check it anyway, and they don't give a f- because they're being overworked and they know they're getting f-ed. So you got to become the cost of business. You got to make it up somehow to them. And I encourage everyone to f-ing do that. Just like I encourage everyone to steal games and pirate whatever the f-ing you want. F-ing this economy, f-ing what they're doing to normal everyday f-ing people. Be gay, do f-ing crime. Better to be a than a fascist.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That guy's unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of beyond the point. I mean, he's one of many people who, with that ideology, I mean, he has this very, like, anti-capitalism ideology, but this is what's being taught to kids in school, and I'll get to a literal example next. And I could go on this long sort of lesson for this poor young man about why some of these grocery stores in the state of Washington have low staffing, have had to resort to, you know, the self-checkouts, and how they operate on very thin margins. And every time there's an increase in the minimum wage, it makes it harder for them to do business. And that's how we end up with food deserts. And then people are coming in like you and stealing stuff. And then they have to pay for security to be out front. And they've got to lock up the ice cream behind lock and key because the crackheads like the sweet stuff and the cold stuff. And so all these costs that aren't just like, oh, we're screwing over the little guy. So he has a fundamental misunderstanding of what's happening with businesses in Washington state and a lot of other things. But it just reminded me of, like, this is this ideology and it's being taught in schools. So there's this New York Post article. A college in New York is offering a class to students called How to Steal. The class teaches the line between private property and public good and says it's drawn in blood. At the New School in Manhattan, a four-year private university where the $60,000 tuition doesn't even cover housing, students at the university's Eugene Lang College of Liberal Arts can learn, quote, how to steal. Noting the sociology seminar is not about petty crime, the course catalog explains it is an exploration of the politics, ethics, and aesthetics of theft in a world where accumulation is sacred, dispossession is routine, and the line between private property and public good is drawn in blood. It includes field trips to, quote, places where capital is hoarded and value is contested, like museums, banks, and even grocery stores. The course catalog proudly declares that the class is a look at, quote, radical ethics and asks, is it possible to steal back what was already stolen? And get this, it's a 4-credit course, meaning the class alone will cost students or their parents an eye-watering $10,040. The thing is, you know that parents are happy to pay for that. Oh my gosh, I'm sending little Jimmy to the New School in Manhattan and he's going to wear his keffiyeh and he's going to take this just wonderful new course. It's called How to Steal. Wow, isn't that bold? Oh my gosh, little Jimmy is going to save the world. And I'm going to spend $10,000. And what's just fascinating about this is they have the expendable income to spend $10,000 on a class like that. So their rich little white kid can go learn about what was the... about the dispossession and the line between private property and public good and politics, ethics, and aesthetics of theft in a world where accumulation is sacred. And your parents got $10,000 for this one class and $60,000 a year for a private education. Like, and they want you to take a class about accumulation of goods. Like, what is wrong? How do you fix that? And I feel so bad for those kids. I feel so bad for those kids because they have parents who are willing to pay for that. No kid is going to be able to afford that on their own. So there are adults who are encouraging it. And then there's no surprise. These kids go out into the world and they argue that what's yours is mine. Distribution of wealth, oppressor versus oppressed, which is fundamentally an explanation for everything that's going on politically, really across the world, is this radical ideology that there's just two systems of people. It's the oppressors and the oppressed. And somehow these like white, you know, kids from wealthy families will be convinced that they're the oppressed. They're the oppressed. When really they have every advantage in the world. And, you know, that just reminds me of that video of that, you know, lefty lunatic with his big YouTube account encouraging people to go steal Mountain Dews. And, sir, why are you drinking Mountain Dew? That's not good for you. It's, like, toxic for your system. Somebody really ought to teach you that. And Nordstrom, why are you employing someone? You literally rely on people buying stuff from you. Why are you employing someone who is out there posting videos to 175,000 followers on YouTube, telling them that they should just steal stuff down with the man? Wild. But who am I? I'm just a chick with a podcast. All right. Let's see. Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention, Zach was on a little vacation. We were on a little vacation. We're back with Doge Watch, but it's not Doge Watch anymore. It's Swamp Watch. So our weekly episodes of now Swamp Watch, we had to change the name. Doge has taken a dive. But we're still focusing on money, government accountability, all of those things. But I actually think changing the name and sort of a little bit of the show will give us much more leeway to cover a lot of different aspects of government accountability. So we're back out with that newest episode of Swamp Watch. Just dropped this morning, so check that out. And in the meantime, make sure you visit knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and sign up for Zach's free Back to Basics live webinar that he's having October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's going to be a frank discussion on the basics, basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So you can hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in his free Back to Basics webinar, October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Register right now, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and don't miss Swamp Watch with me and Zach Abraham every week. A new episode just out this morning. All right, let's get to some comments from all you smart, smart people. And then I've got to end with this Fox News clip that had me just standing with applaud in our closing sanity check. All right, on Pam Bondi, my calls for her to be fired or resign, old sub sailor. There are a lot of people in the should resign line ahead of Pam Bondi. Oh, who? Who should resign that would be in the line ahead of Pam Bondi? And I think she's fine, but you can't, you just cannot be the chief law enforcer of our nation and have a total misunderstanding of what the First Amendment protects and does not protect. It's outrageous. And had she done it once and then sort of apologized, maybe, but it's multiple times this week. It's wild. Brian, I find that problematic. This is America. You're free to hate anyone you want. You just can't act on it violently by breaking the law. Exactly. And when you do, you're not, it's not that you're getting prosecuted for the speech involved. You're getting prosecuted for an action. There's different laws for that. Joe B, free speech is my highest political value. Without free expression, there is no freedom, 100%. And like I said, that is the final domino toward totalitarianism if you're not allowed to speak freely. The drunk wedding photographer, that's their name? I like that.
I like that one.
Although if you were drunk and a photographer at my wedding, I would be livid. say what you want, just don't hurt anyone physically. It ain't that hard of a concept. Yeah, and words aren't violence. The left literally believes that words are violence, and I think that's the frustration, is here we have Pam Bondi basically saying words are violence. No, they're not. And don't do that. We've been fighting against that idea for so long. Now you're just setting us back. Labeling Antifa as domestic terrorists. Christine, maybe they are quietly building a solid RICO case against them? I hope so. I hope so. You know, yeah. I hope they're doing something because they're running out of time. And Trump's time in office, 3 years, is going to go by lickety split. And I don't want him to leave anything on the table. Sergeant Pickles, making Antifa a terror organization could be the slippery slope that lets Dems declare conservative groups as terrorists. I get it. And I get it. I do understand slippery slope is a thing. But like, didn't the Southern Poverty Law Center already call Moms for Liberty a terror organization? And I mean, you've had politicians who've basically said the same thing. So they've said it. Are they going to do it? But also, they're not committing a crime. So that's the difference. It's like, now, if there are conservative groups out there in mass committing crimes, yeah, then maybe they need to take a closer look at them and build RICO charges against them, too. It's in the actions, not the words. It's in the actions, not the affiliation. And Antifa is out there committing acts of terror. They're terrorizing citizens of this country. They're harming them. They're burning things. They're destroying private property. So, and yes, they're killing people. So there ought to be, and if there's a group on the right you can show me that's doing the same things, by all means, treat them the same. On the cleanup at the Hanford site, Dale Draper, sounds like our Sound Transit budget. Yep. It's like, oh, we've just got to do this, so you just have to deal with it and live with it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what we said it was going to cost.
Yeah. Nicole's cat, maybe Washington should adopt the WWFD. What would Florida do? Mm-hmm. Washington State will never adopt that.
No. Nope.
Not under Bob Ferguson, for sure. On the rape that happened in the tent city of the five-year-old, hello, watermelon. I can hear the leftists now. There are predators in houses, too. Predators deserve homes. Yeah. Rob's Pierre. And we were looking into it because if you are a sex offender, you're not allowed to be in those facilities.
Right. He's so not, we didn't. His only prior is a armed robbery charge in the 90s. So it doesn't sound like he was a sex offender. But yeah, there is supposed to be some more oversight.
Yeah.
And you're. Obviously, it's supposed to be clean and sober housing.
Right. And that's not happening. We all know
at
that.
At the same time, I'm like, how is a five-year-old? She should be in school. She should be.
They shouldn't let kids live at those.
This is not compassion. No. Again, like we were talking about in Portland and somebody dead on the street. This is same. To me, it's the same. Allowing a child to live in those conditions, that's not compassion. That is not keeping families together. No.
No, and we're also, we have billions of dollars. And you're telling me that that's not the person you can get into an apartment?
Right.
You have all these apartments. Why wouldn't a mother with a child,
clean and sober, right, with a child?
Why aren't they in an apartment? Why are they in a tent? That literally makes no sense. It's insane. Why do you look so small right now?
Oh, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right, further away from the camera.
I think you were doing a little bit of leaning, sorry, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to look like a monster from hell. Oh.
I feel like my camera's also off center, so I'm trying to center myself over here.
Okay, we'll fix your camera after the mm-hmm. show. Sorry, it's something happened.
But yeah, so I just think that the whole situation is not right.
No, it's horrible.
Not right.
On whiny Seattle students walking out over lunchtimes, Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Isn't double lunch hate speech? I don't know. Graham Finneason? Graham Finneason. When Parkland occurred, my high school rearranged their schedule to accommodate a gun control walkout. Even walkout participants found it ridiculous. Yeah, school deciding what's worth walking out for and what's not. Well,
we didn't ever officially get to cover this, but there apparently was a thing where they were teaching kindergartners how to walk out. They did practice walkouts. We never got to confirm because there was never any video and the school wouldn't confirm
there
it to
us. There was photos
but
of kindergartners in a Seattle school.
Alleged photos, but we never got
right.
them.
Yeah.
But
no, I saw one of the images.
Oh, you did?
Yes, but the school wouldn't confirm. No,
that's
it wouldn't
it
even respond. And so we couldn't go
couldn't
with it.
No, that's
what
I
mean,
it was.
We're kind of going with it now, but
yeah,
you know,
I don't
in
care.
A more.
But yes, that they are teaching. So
yeah.
Be like, I can't say it enough times. Be aware of what your kids are doing at school all day.
100%.
You got
they
to. Are not telling you everything.
Jackie McWalter Huff, they're upset about two lunches. My kids' first year of middle school, they had to have three because they have so many students. They couldn't safely have half the student body in the lunchroom. They are down to two lunches now. But still, yeah, there was obviously a reason for it,
well,
right?
They said that, you know, if you have kids in a lunch line and you only have 30 minutes,
yeah,
the kids weren't getting lunch in time to,
yes.
To make it through the line and eat their lunch.
Right.
So they have two lunches.
Right.
Done.
You're split up. It's not a big
even,
deal.
It's not up for debate. Goodbye.
All right. Boo Boo Bar, a $31 super chat. Is that symbolic of something?
Hmm,
what
31.
Could that be? Long live the Republic, they say. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. I just wanted to share my love I have for Charlie Kirk's family. May God give him hold him in his hands as they work through this loss. Thank you again, Brandy, Nicole, and Daryl. Much love from Nebraska. Thank you. That's so nice. Hmm. Papa Woody gave a $2 super chat cash for Miranda's welcome to Seattle packet because Miranda said, I didn't get my free foil and pipe welcome package when I came to town. Oh, shoot. They're supposed to hand it to you when you get off the plane at SeaTac Airport. And one for you, and one for you, and a boofing kit, by the way. If you'd like to take your drugs rectally, they have those too.
Did you notice?
It's true.
I know. Ugh. Ugh. Did you notice coming in, because we both flew internationally, and coming into Seattle? So leaving Seattle, it's not a pleasant picture right now. It is quite chaotic in the terminal construction and all of the chaos. And,
yes.
And it's been like that for years. But then internationally, you get off the plane and you go up the nice tunnel.
Well, it's a new.
Well, I know, but that's what these people coming in for the World Cup, right? They're going to come into this beautiful, like, and it's so open and it's so gigantic. And I'm like, wow, the foreign visitors really get the best of what we have to offer.
Yeah, they're
going to
get a good.
But if you're from the States,
and then wait till they go down to Third and Pine. That'll be a rude awakening for them. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check in a minute. Thank you, Nicole. Yeah. First, reach out to our friend Wes Jones if you're thinking about selling your home. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are on it. They are following and tracking the market. They know how to respond to, you know, a market where it might be slow, a market where there might be a lot of homes that are listed. So a lot of competition out there. Wes has been through it all. You name it, he's been through it. He knows how to respond to it. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by going to his website and just using their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can go from there. Wes will give you a free market analysis. So talk about how homes are performing in your area, you know, how long they're sitting before they sell, what they're going for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then he's going to come up with a marketing plan specific for your home to make sure that it gets the most possible eyeballs, really stands out. That means more feet in the door, more offers on the table. So he's going to go through all of it with you. Hold your hand every step of the way. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Admittedly, I don't find Greg Gutfeld's show very funny.
Really? What is the show? I watch it every night.
Yeah, it's called The Greg Gutfeld Show, isn't it?
I think, yeah.
I don't know. I never laugh. I don't think the jokes are funny. Sorry, Greg.
Sometimes the jokes aren't that funny, but really I like the characters. I like everybody. I like the way they all kind of
good
get
conversation.
Along.
It's not my favorite show. However, Greg had some comments that just really nailed it on Charlie Kirk. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. So I want to say this was on The Five, I think, and he was a panelist on The Five. And I don't know if you've been watching since Charlie Kirk's assassination, but Greg has run out of Fs to give. He even swore, he said the F word on Fox News, and I wonder what the FCC had to say about that. They probably called in a favor with old Donald Trump, like, please don't let us lose our FCC license over that F word. But they have Jessica Tarlov, I think is her name. She's like one of the kind of Democrats that they'll have on just to have a Democrat on. She's reasonable, though, but he was just not having it with her. Something I've talked about, the both sides-ism after Charlie Kirk's assassination. It's not enough just to talk about that and the political violence problem on the left. It has to be a little bit about January 6th and what about this and what about that. And he just has had it and he lost it and it was great.
Why is only this happening on the left and not the right? That's all we need to know.
What about
there's absolutely no cognitive.
What about Melissa Horstmann that we just talked about?
You want to talk about Melissa Horstmann? Did you know her name before it happened? None of us did. None of us were spending every single day talking about Mrs. Horstmann. I never heard of her until after she died.
She doesn't matter?
Don't play that bullshit with me. You know what I'm saying is there was no demonization amplification about that woman before she died. It was a specific crime against her by somebody who knew her. The same, and now you could bring up Josh Shapiro, but then you will not bring up, for example, that was a pro-Palestine person. So don't use your, what about this? The fact of the matter is the both sides argument not only doesn't fly, we don't care. And I understand the defensiveness. I understand why people are saying, what about this and what about this? Because if you have to face the underlying fact to this, your life is going to fall apart because you're going to realize you're not the good guys. If you sat around and you defended the mutilation of children, you're not the good guys. If you sat 600, 700 cases of harassment against Republicans and you said, but what about this? What about this? And then you see this murder after calling somebody a fascist, you realize maybe I'm not the good guy. That is a hell of a realization to deal with. So therefore, you have to grasp at rationalizations. You don't have to do that, Jessica. They do. I don't believe you're part of that group, but why the hell do you have to mimic and echo that crap to us?
Why the hell indeed? Period. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, as hard as that seems at times. Let's see. If you haven't subscribed to support our show, we really would appreciate your support. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And while you're there, shop our merch store. We've got some great bumper stickers. Let your freak flag fly. Let your common sense flag fly. Hats, etc., tote bags, you know, check it out. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Toodaloo.